You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Buonasera, Signora Martinelli, and benvenuto a Firenze. We are back in Florence. I'm so excited.
You absolutely love Florence, and so do I. What a great town, and what I love about it so much is the history and the way that they honor their history. And when you see the way that they honor their history, it makes me sad that we are dishonoring our history in the United States. That being said, it's just a beautiful town. There's so much history, so many old buildings that are still standing that are just absolutely amazing. And all of these little alleyways and things to do and places to eat and things to see. It's amazing.
Well, you know, we're visiting again with friends. We were here last year. We're staying in the residence of the Aldobrandini, a very famous and powerful family during the Medici era. And we're literally doing our show tonight in the shadow of the Medici Chapel.
Yes.
I mean, it's 50 yards away. I'm looking out the window, and the beautiful Medici Chapel is right there. And what a vibrant city. I'm so in love with Florence. And instead of a coffee conversation tonight, I'm drinking a Peroni beer, and you're having a Pinot Grigio.
Yes. Yeah, and we're here with good friends, and we will be heading out to a late dinner soon.
Because the Europeans eat later in the evening.
Yes.
They don't even begin to eat until about 8:30. And you know what? I kind of like that, Lynn.
You know, what I like is it's been so hot in the daytime that it's nice to be in the evening because it does cool down. And then you're outside for the most part when you're eating, unless you happen to choose a restaurant and sit inside. You really have all these outdoor cafes, which are absolutely amazing.
You know, there is not a bad meal to be had in Florence. And Florence, as you well know, because we've been walking all over the city since we've come here, is a very pedestrian-friendly city. You know, there's only about 350,000 people in Florence, and it's divided between North Florence and Ultra Arno, which is the north side of the city. Okay, this is the south side of the city. And I mean, we've got everything. We literally are about a quarter of a mile away from the famous Il Duomo, which is the Cathedral Santa Maria dei Fiori. And we've been down to the Galleria Uffizi, which is where we have the David and where we have the beautiful statues of Neptune and the most iconic statues of some of the real moving forces in Florence during that Medici era.
Yes.
Which I think went for about 300 years and developed into two popes, Pope Pius X and Pope Clement VII. And actually, one of the things that the Aldobrandini residence is known for is, number one, it's the only L-shaped building in all of Florence.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to about the mid-1500s, and it was the summer residence of Pope Clement VII, who was very close to the Medici family. So, you know, we're really dealing with some iconic history here and just having a blast.
I mean,
several great meals, having wonderful conversations with our friends. And so why don't we, speaking of conversations, let's go over to the States for a minute and talk about what's going on there. I'm a little bit troubled about the current Democratic candidates because just recently they came out where now they want to get rid of all of our detention centers in the United States.
Yeah, and this seems to be a theme amongst the Democratic candidates. And they, this is just a new thing with them that they want to do, and they just can't be liberal enough about it. So what would you do with all of these people streaming across the border? And that's the question, is what are you going to do? Some of their thoughts are that they put ankle bracelets on them or they put some sort of monitoring device. And anybody in law enforcement knows that people cut those things off and they disappear. So why would you want to do that? And one of the reasons that they say that they want to do it is because the people are not being taken care of well enough. And nothing could be further from the truth. I promise you that the people are being taken care of better than they were where they lived before they got there.
And actually, these people are in detention, so they're prisoners. They're people that are in custody. And they are being handled with so much more deference than we handle our own prisoners.
Yes.
As any police officer knows, and any person with any common sense or knowledge about our criminal justice system is, we do not house spouses and children with male or female prisoners. Okay, name one prison, name one jail in the entire United States of America where we have prisoners that get to be in prison or jail with their families. There's not a single one. These people are all in detention. They are prisoners. They are not free to go. And the whole Democratic rhetoric, emotional rhetoric is, well, we're separating families. Well, you're darn right we're separating families, and there's a good reason for that, but not with immigrants now. We have capitulated, which really angers me, and now we're housing all these people together. And so all this rhetoric from the left about the separation of families is nothing but that. It's a false rhetoric, and they get treated very, very nicely.
Well, don't forget, the reason that they're there is because they have committed an illegal act and a crime on the United States of America by entering the United States of America illegally. So they should be housed somewhere. They should not be free to go. You cannot let these people in the country and have them free to go. We will completely have another rush to the border, which is, I guess, really what they want. And by the way, you know, in May, the amount of arrests at the border was about 133,000. And in July, it was down into the 70,000 area. Why? Because President Trump got Mexico to cooperate on
militarily helping
stop this flow of people.
Right. And also, we've been building more border walls.
And we are building more walls.
I think we build about
fast as we can.
Yeah, I think we've done about another 100 miles of a border wall.
I did not know how many miles.
The one big one was a 60-mile expanse of a 30-foot barrier. And then we've done, you know, piecemeal, you know, 5 miles here, 10 miles
right.
here.
Right, places where there was holes that we needed to fill.
Exactly, yeah. Right. I want to talk about former Vice President Biden for a minute, because I'll tell you what, maybe I'll be the soothsayer, maybe not. But I think this guy's totally losing it. I don't see this guy making it to the end zone in this election that's coming up. I think the guy's losing it. He's got his foot in his mouth more often than not. He's extremely hypocritical. And one of the things that he just said, which is a lie, I'll just say that right off, there is absolutely nothing factual to support what he just said. And that is that there is no reason to have these detention centers because everybody knows they all show up to court. And that is 100% lie.
Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, historically, 98% of all the people that get court dates never show up for court. So it's almost 100%. So the complete antithesis of what former Vice President Biden is saying. And I can't believe that the mainstream media does not hold people like Biden and his other colleagues, Democratic colleagues that are running for president, why they don't hold their feet to the fire and say, you know, that's not right. The 98% of the people never even show up for court. And your thoughts?
Well, I don't think that people read and know enough, and I think that they listen to these sound bites and they know that there's a percentage of the people that will just buy what they say, and the media will repeat only what they want them to hear. So I mean, that's what the problem is just that we have the fake news and we have the fake sound bites and people tend to believe it. Now, what I do think, Ron, though, I see more and more people, at least that I speak to, that get it. And they're tired of the fake news, and they understand that they're getting fake news, and they understand and they're tired of what these politicians are saying, because just common sense, if you have any common sense, it tells you that this is not true, because you can see with your own eyes that these things aren't true. And if you take the time and a few minutes to, you know, engage yourself in learning what's going on for real, it doesn't take a lot of time. It just takes, you know, getting the places where you can get the facts without all the spin. Then you can make an intelligent decision on your own, because as I look at this field of 10 that's going to be in this upcoming debate, it just scares me, Ron. There is not one of them in there that I could say, well, you know, I'd take this one over that one. I can't say that I would take any of them. They scare me.
I think this is the worst group of Democratic candidates I've ever seen in my lifetime. Certainly, it's the greatest group of Democratic candidates, but to me, it's the worst group. We've got nothing but angry people out there, angry, hateful, and lying politicians. And what scares me, and of course, this scared me during the 2016 election, is that the mainstream media is absolutely complicit with furthering these false narratives and not holding these people to task and accountability with regards to the ridiculous statements that they're coming out with. So we'll just see where this goes. Hey, can I switch it up? And we'll get back to U.S. stories. But I want to talk about, because we're in Italy right now, just last week, the Italian government collapsed. And I'm sure that not very many people in the United States, unless they're Italians, follow what happens in here in Italy. But we have different party factions in Italy, just like we have different party factions in the United States.
Yeah, it's a little different, though. It's run a little bit differently.
Sure, because they have a parliament, they have prime ministers, so the political way of doing things in Europe, and especially Italy, is quite different than we're used to in the United States. If people have been trying to follow a little bit of the convoluted political problems that they've had in Great Britain, Italy is kind of like the same thing. So, you know, you've got a prime minister, you've got a parliament, the parliament creates laws, the parliament would kind of be like our Senate and Congress combined, and then you get the different vying political factions. Well, in the country of Italy, the factions are the Democratic Party, which is referred to as the PD, and they're the more of the leftist party, leftist progressive socialists, and then we have the Five Star Movement, which is referred to as, you know, M5S, and then we have the far right Anti-Immigration League. So we have these different parties constantly vying for political power. Now, what's interesting in Europe as compared to the United States is, in the United States, we elect a president every 4 years, and unless you impeach that president remains in power, no matter how the Congress goes, no matter how the Senate goes. Now, that's not to say that the Congress and the Senate cannot give the president of the United States a lot of problems and headaches, because we certainly see this with President Trump and our Democratic Congress and our, you know, kind of mealy-mouthed Republican Senate, where the Senate holds the majority for now. But in Italy and these countries, Great Britain, Italy, they have a prime minister and a parliament. And you have the national elections where the electorate, the people of the country, elect not only the president of the United States, but a party. And then the parliament votes on putting forth a prime minister. Okay? So what we've got here is we've got currently what's going on is that the Democratic Party in Italy is reeling after coming in second in the most recent elections, and those elections were last year. And what we had was the Five Star Movement triumphing in that same election, which dropped the Democratic Party in Italy down to third place. And so we've got currently a far-right anti-immigration league, which is the larger movement in Italy right now. And then we've got this five-star movement that's moved up. And just a little background, Linda, on the five-star movement, because I had to do some research on it. It's a movement that was born about 10 years ago. It's a grassroots movement, and it started out sort of as a anti-establishment rebellion capable of forging alliances with either side. So the far left, okay, or the far right. And so currently, the five-star movement only holds about 17% of the popular vote, okay? So in other words, 17% of the electorate are favorable towards the five-star movement. But what has happened now, because the government has become shaky, and we need to talk about why the government is shaky, and that is, it allowed the five-star movement to come up and sort of mess up things and put pressure on the current far-right immigration.
Which is led by Salvini, correct?
Which is led by Salvini. So now what's going to happen is the government, the parties are going to be, you know, sort of in a Machiavellian sort, which is a good term to use in Italy, Machiavelli. They're going to be wrangling with each other and seeing if they can coalesce. Now, here's what's interesting about the five-star movement, and that is that it's neither to the right nor to the left. These people would be considered moderates, but they're also anti-establishment.
Well, so let's bring that down to a street person's level.
Yeah.
Okay. Yesterday I had a conversation. We had a huge rainstorm, and we happened to be kind of holed up in the rainstorm.
Literally in a store.
Yeah. And so I started talking to the store owners and asking them, you know, what this means that their government collapsed. What does this mean to them, the working people in Italy? And it was interesting what they said, because if you just take it down to the level of the people who just really are living their lives, they didn't think it was so good. First of all, they've said they haven't had good government for a very long time, and we know that because last year we heard the same thing, that they're in big financial distress. Why? They're in financial distress because they gave so much money to people coming into their country. So basically, a socialistic type of a environment, that the people that are working, their taxes went up sky high, their services went down. It's all the usual effects of what we have with a socialistic society. So with the European Union, what the European Union wants for Italy is to let all of these immigrants in that are coming by boat. They're coming from Libya, they're coming from Africa, they're coming from everywhere, and they're flooding into the shores just like our immigrants are in the U.S. And the Italians don't need it, and they don't want it, and it's harming the jobs, and it's harming the people in Italy. So the citizens don't want it. But you have the politicians, and you have those politicians, the same as in the U.S., who want the immigrants to be able to flood in. And the European Union want the immigrants to flood in, because what? It doesn't affect them. It affects Italy. So if they come into Italy, they don't come into their countries, right?
So, and actually, they want them. The pressure is for the Italians to accept more of these immigrants from their countries.
Yes. So, but the people don't want it. So what we have is now Salvini, who was the one person who was a hard line against the immigrants flooding in.
And who gets along well with President Trump.
And who gets along well with President Trump is now kind of the underdog now, where he was on top before.
Yeah, he's on the ropes.
Yeah, so basically everything right now has kind of collapsed in Italy as far as their government. And the people don't see this as being good. So that's where we're at, and we're going to talk more about that next time, Ron. But let's take a coffee break, a wine break at that.
And a beer break.
And a beer break.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the Vision of the Voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, cheers.
Cheers.
Okay. You know, I want to stay on Italy and on the international environment right now, but I also want to point out that just recently, I mean very recently, you also have England, where the whole thing with Boris
Brexit.
Johnson has has kind of fallen apart, and he lost his majority in Parliament. So now nobody knows what's going to happen with that. They're going to have a vote, and I don't know where that's going to go, because you have one side that wants to do one thing, one side that wants to do another, and Finland also. Finland's government collapsed this week as well. So,
you know, there's so much instability in Europe, in the European Union, and I think one of the reasons for that, of course, there are many reasons, but to me, as an outsider taking a look in, I think when they established the European Union, it was based on an idea like the United States of America. That's why they call it the European Union. It's the union of all these different countries.
And it had a lot to do with currency.
Yeah, well, it did.
Yes.
They wanted one currency, but they wanted open borders. They didn't want to, you know, stop at every country like, you know, everybody like we used to do when we traveled through Europe. You know, you get stopped. You know, at every single country had a border, and so they wanted to have the similar currency and everything. But here's the problem that I see with that, is that not only they have different languages, but they have different cultures.
Different cultures. And even though they wanted the open borders to cross the borders into the different countries, what, again, the unintended consequences. They didn't want people flooding from other countries in here and changing the look and face of Europe, which is what they've done now.
But as soon as the Eastern Europeans, and they started this, and you can understand why, because of all the oppression in the, you know, the old former Soviet Union and everything, and all the extreme poverty there in those communist countries, and that history of just oppression and poverty there, you know, they want to come and they want to get jobs and make money. And of course, they want to come in. But when the European Union destroyed their borders, there was nothing holding the masses of people, not only from Eastern Europe, but from Africa and, I mean, all over the place, from coming in here. And then once they came in, it's just like we have in the United States. They have no language skills, they have no job skills, they have no education, and now they become what we refer to as charges.
Yes.
Or now they're being subsidized by these governments. And I thought maybe you would, you know, get into that and talk about maybe why the country of Finland has collapsed financially.
Well, we will talk about that, but first, I would love to have you introduce Bob Prevost.
Well, you know, that it's so great to have Bob here, because Bob was with us last year when we did our river cruise, and we did a few Talking While Marrieds when we had Lance and Diana Martini. Bob is another one of our just fantastic consultants. Bob is our homicide expert, and so people usually hear Bob on my program, A Threat of Evidence. And so now we've got Bob and Connie Prevost here. And how does it feel to actually be in the Aldo Brandini residence and to be walking around in Florence, Bob?
This is an amazing place. Florence used to be the capital of Italy, and there's so much history here to appreciate and enjoy. It's just amazing.
And Bob's a great conversationalist, so that's why we're inviting him to join us for a beer on tonight's Talking While Married.
Yep, and if people hear chairs here, it's because we are literally sitting in a room from the 1500s, and we are literally sitting on chairs from that era as well.
Right, and so you might hear a little bit of creaking.
just to
kind of put it in perspective, we're in a giant dining room that probably seats about 20 people, and above us is a beautiful fresco that was commissioned by one of the famous painters in Italy, in Florence of the time, in 1749, as a wedding present to the couple, the Aldobrandinis, and the couple that got married during that era.
Yes, so, and everything in here is original, so it's quite a fascinating place to be. Interesting acoustics, interesting, you know, the furnishings and everything being as old as they are, it's a fascinating place to be.
You know, literally the brick tile that we are standing on right now was built in 1549.
Yep. But we have been talking with Bob a lot over the last few days about what we're seeing in Florence and about Italy and about kind of the comparisons between what's happened in the United States with immigration and what's happening here in Italy, Bob.
And it's amazing. It's the European Union. You know, we don't know what the end of the story is going to be, but the way things are going, it's you know, as Americans, it doesn't matter what state we're from, we're Americans. And Europe's a little bit different. Each country has its own culture, its own history, and all of that is in the process of being changed now because of, for example, I landed in Frankfurt the other day, and as soon as I got off the plane, I'm in Europe. I can go anywhere I want. I can put my passport in my suitcase, and everything is open. And I think pretty soon you're going to see a dilution of the cultures, and everybody's just going to be a European.
You know, it's sort of an amalgamation where you really don't. I just see the cultures being destroyed, and with the people, you know, sort of refusing, just like in the United States, I see such parallels, and they're not positive parallels. People do not want to assimilate with, like, the Italians or with the Germans or the Austrians or the French or the English. What they want is their own conclaves of their own countries and cultures within a country. Now, all of the cultures are very, very interesting, and certainly we can learn something from all of the cultures, but not at the expense of losing the national culture of every country that all these refugees pour into. Wouldn't you agree, Linda?
Well, I definitely agree, and you know, we've seen it every time that we come to Europe, Ron, where the face of Europe changes. It's almost like, you know, just mixing two different things and making one, the cultures are not the same as what they were in the countries. They're all mixed up now. And, you know, whether people think that that's good or bad, that's totally their opinion and up to them. To me, a lot of the beauty of Europe was those different cultures and those different, I don't know, the people looked different in the different countries, and they acted differently, and they dressed a little bit differently, and they spoke a little bit differently. And I just thought that that was just such an amazing thing and such a beautiful thing. And now we've kind of, it's this whole one world kind of thing, which is not my kind of world.
You know, Bob, you've been to Germany. I mean, you go to Germany almost every single year because of, you know, your kids and their relationship with the Air Force and everything like that. What are your thoughts about that, about how Germany and these countries have
changed? Germany's changing. Germany has taken in a lot of refugees. They've helped them, which is fine. But the thing is, from Germany, they've assimilated into whatever country they want to end up in going. There's no border anymore. If they want to end up in Italy and live here, that's what they're going to do. Now, I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, but what I'm seeing is a dilution of the culture. If you travel to, say, Japan, that's a fairly homogenous society. It's because they control their borders. They control who lives there, and it's different. So, I think Europe needs to think about what they want. What do Europeans want their countries to look like from now on?
You know, that's true. And what I see, again, drawing to the parallels of the United States, is these countries are starting to go broke. And that economic stress is causing a stress on whatever political party holds the power at that time. And so if you take a look at Finland, that collapsed because it's going bankrupt. It collapsed because it became such a socialistic society that they subsidize literally everything. So free education, free health care, free subsidies, free living subsidies, free food, free this, free that. And it's a small country, and the people in Finland cannot subsidize the masses of people that bring nothing to the table when they come to live in Finland.
And that's what's happening in a lot of these countries.
Well, we saw it in Greece. You know, Greece went broke, and the EU had to bail them out.
Right. And people are getting tired of that.
But how many times can the EU bail them out? Because here now we have England in trouble. We have France not doing great. We have Finland. We have
Italy.
Belgium.
Well,
we have Italy.
Italy.
We have now the couple places that are doing pretty well, that are controlling a lot of their own how things happen in their country. Austria. Austria is a perfect example that when we were there, they don't believe in helping the immigrants. They can't stop them from coming across their border, but they don't have to allow them to work, and they don't have to house them, and they don't have to give them benefits or medical or money, and they don't. And that works well for them, and it's a beautiful country, and it's clean, and it's taken care of. Why? Because the immigrants don't want to stay there because they're not getting free handouts.
And especially, you know, in Europe, of course, you know, they have the seasons, and when it gets cold, it gets pretty darn cold. And those people, and I think we had a discussion with the Austrian police last year when we were in Austria and Germany. We were all together. Mm-hmm. Bob was with us. And the cops, because we watched them doing a pedestrian stop, right, a ped stop, and it was obviously someone that was Eastern European, and he was begging and doing things like that. And when they finished that, we went over and talked with the cops, and that's where we learned that information, that they can't stop them from coming into the country, but they absolutely can stop and make the decision, like you said, Linda, as to what do they work and, you know, what do they get subsidies. And they don't get any subsidies, so when the weather changes, they go home.
Right, right. And Bob has been to Germany so many times. You know, we've been a couple of times, but, you know, Germany, last year when we were there, they had a lot of people on either side of that issue, right, Bob? I mean, they had people that absolutely didn't want any more immigrants in, and then they had people that did, and it's no different than the U.S., but the German people are pretty angry about all these immigrants. It has really harmed their economy. Is that not right?
That's correct. Well, look at the value of the euro right now. It's, I think, what, $1.11 today?
Yeah, by the way, it's a great time, if you're an American, it's a great time to come to Europe, right? Because things are cheap here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's $1.11, and I'll tell you, I'm looking at all the food prices. We're having some great meals here, and we're going into the store and also buying things for snacks. And I got to tell you, it's cheaper than in the United States. So I'm really having a blast because I'm a foodie.
Germans subsidize a lot of family things. Like if you have a baby, you get an allowance for your baby for the first couple of years, for diapers and all that kind of stuff. They actually subsidize a lot of what they do, which is great, but you got to be able to afford it. And you can't afford it if you're subsidizing a lot of refugees and a lot of other programs, just like we're going through in the United States.
Why should the government be subsidizing diapers for your baby? I mean, see, in my world, if you can't support your child, don't have one. You need to be responsible for whatever you create in the world instead of having everybody else have to be responsible for it for you. And I don't get that, and I don't get why they did that.
But, you know, but we do that in the same thing in the United States, yeah, with EBTs and food stamps and things.
It's a cultural thing, so that no matter what position the mother's in, maybe there is no father in the picture, that baby will be at least kept in a certain, you know, certain you know, medical condition, safety condition,
right,
and they'll provide minimum stuff for the baby. Food, diapers, medical care, at least for the first couple of years. And that's something that culture decided to do, which is, I don't really have a big objection to that, but it's got to be paid for. And, you know, all the stuff comes out of taxes. That's where it all comes from.
Yeah.
And how much do we want to pay?
And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we talked with Giovanni, who is the owner of the Aldo Brandini residence, and he gets involved in investments and things like that. And then, Linda, you spoke with one of the shop owners yesterday, and, you know, my question was, does this affect you personally? You know, how does this affect you personally? And he said, you know, Giovanni told me, he goes, you know, we're so used to this and this instability that, you know, life goes on in Italy, but we resent the fact that we have to pay such high taxes to subsidize people that bring nothing to the table.
Yeah, and we, you could see that with the shop owners as well. That being said, every American should come to Italy at some point in time, because it's such a pleasure to see how they honor their history. And the same thing with Germany. You know, they honor their history, and they actually, I think all of Europe does, where we're trying to
cover it up.
We're trying to Photoshop it. We're trying to change it. Our history books are changing it. And they really honor their history. And you can see it everywhere that you walk. You can see it in every building. You can see that they have left paintings on walls that were there for hundreds of years.
Right.
I mean, even outside, there's paintings
Correct.
On the walls. And it's just, I love it. I love the history of it. I love seeing where we all came from. And to my mind, history, I mean, Italy is such the seat of really the human race in so many ways. There's just so much history here, and not necessarily just Florence, but in Rome and different areas, that it's fascinating to see. And we have nothing in the United States like this to compare to.
Well, you know, yeah, and you have to just put it in context. You know, we're looking at the Medici Chapel that was built in the 1400s, 50 yards from us. We're standing on bricks that are, you know, twice as old as the United States of
yes,
America,
yeah.
Okay? And we're down, you know, within a quarter mile here is the baptistry of St. John, and that is the oldest building in Florence, which is 1,000 years old. So, I mean, come on, that's, you know, like four times longer than the United States has been in existence. So it's wonderful to come here and to be part of the history and to learn from the people and to enjoy the beautiful Italian culture and some of the other cultures that are here as well and have great meals. You know, I want to switch it up a little bit and talk about the story about Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. And we'll probably continue this into our, you know, second glass of wine or whatever. But Lori has been a very controversial mayor. She just got elected this last November. And I'll tell you, I think the girl's got a screw loose. And she has started to blame all of the Chicago gun violence on the conservatives and the Republican Party. And who better to talk with than, you know, Bob Prevost, who does homicides for a living. And I thought maybe we could all just have a little conversation that'll carry over into the next segment.
Yep.
So let me give you some statistics, all right? So Lori Lightfoot has blamed the entire, you know, gun violence thing on the states that surround Illinois that she says have more lax gun laws, which allow people from out of the state to come into Chicago with guns.
Well, and is that really what they're doing? Or are the people from Chicago going out of the state and stealing guns? Which is it?
Well, that's it. And we'll talk about that right after we get a glass of wine and a couple of bottles of beer.
Okay.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com. So we're back with our last cup of wine, and
It's a glass of wine, Ron.
Glass of wine and my last Peroni of the evening, and Bob too. And so let me get back in with Mayor Lori Lightfoot from Chicago. I mean, how dare she blame the Republicans for this, for having lax gun laws? That's not at all what's going on in that city. And it has historically been the second most violent city in the United States for years, St. Louis being the most violent city, Baltimore being the second, you know, and third violent city in comparison to Chicago. And then, of course, you got Detroit, and you got Memphis and New Orleans and, you know, a lot of these other cities. But just to keep this in perspective, just this last Labor Day weekend, we had 66 people shot and 12 people killed. What do you think, Bob?
That's just amazing. It's just hard to comprehend those kind of statistics, but it's systemic of what's going on there. And I assume that what they're having is either a turf war or they're having a gang war and they're, you know, a drug war and they're killing each other.
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time doing the statistics for, you know, tonight's discussion, and here they are as of today. They've had 349 people killed. Of those 349 people that were killed, 320 were shot and killed with firearms, and they've had a total of 1,895 people shot, wounded, and killed altogether. Chicago has something called the shot clock. So literally, they do statistically, they can tell you, you know, when people are getting shot. And in the city of Chicago, this is absolutely amazing compared to the where you and I have worked, Bob, which are in big areas, big urban areas. A person is shot in Chicago, Linda, every 3 minutes and 6 seconds, and they're murdered every 16 hours and 54 minutes. It's absolutely incredible.
Yet the mayor blames somebody else for the problem, and they take no accountability. Now, if you remember, Ron, you and I talked about the civilian oversight group over the police there,
right?
And how ridiculous they are, and how they themselves are doing illegal things. And the Bob can speak to this, and you can speak to this even better than I can. But just from the outside looking in, I mean, these police have to be demoralized there. They get no support from their chief or their mayors or their council or the oversight committee. And the criminals are running that city. There are so many ways to fix this, and we amongst us talk about it all the time. People need to know that there's a way to fix this. And, you know, Bob, I'm going to let you take that because you're the guy that knows how to fix this, and it's not being done.
Well, you know, before he even opens his mouth for a second, I'm just going to step in and give some context to Bob Privo, because Bob actually managed a homicide unit at one time in a big metropolitan area, and also managed internal affairs. So there's nobody better tonight to talk about homicides and oversight than Bob Privo.
Exactly.
And one of the things we did, and I happened to have worked in narcotics for 8 years, and in narcotics we had a task force of 20 different police departments working under one roof. And in the area I worked, we had a town called East Palo Alto. And East Palo Alto in California at that time in 1992 had the highest homicide rate per capita in the United States. In fact, it was on the cover of Time magazine. It was an absolute tragic human crisis. It was a town of East Palo Alto of 15,000 people, which is not a lot, 99% black, and they had a absolute terrible gang problem. And the gangs were fighting with each other over turf and who's going to distribute the cocaine and the meth and the crack, and they were killing each other. And this is what's going on in Chicago. And what we did was we, as a task force, went down there and we got it together with the chief and the mayor and everybody and said, okay, let's do a threat assessment. Let's figure out how we're going to solve this problem. Now, whether it's in a little town of East Palo Alto or a big town, city like Chicago, it's the same process. You do a threat assessment, you figure out what the problem is, you come up with a strategy to solve it, and you go seek the funds that you think you're going to need to do this and the personnel, which is what we did. Yes, we got some federal help because the town of East Palo Alto couldn't afford even the officers that they had. They were a very poor community. They were incorporated, so it was kind of left on us to come up with a solution. Well, what you do is you go to the federal government. You say, okay, this is the resources we need to solve the problem. Keep politics out of this. Who cares where the guns came from? The guns are there. I don't care where they came from. The guns are on your street corner, Chicago. You got to do something about it. You're killing your citizens. And unless you come up with a solution, it's going to continue. It's going to get worse. Okay? It didn't start out this bad, but here you are. Here's your problem you're presented with. Let's come up with a solution. The solution is you need funding. You need people to help you. You need federal resources. Okay, we used the FBI, we used ATF to help us. You need to do undercover operations. There's a lot of strategies you can do. You guys decide that yourself. And you come up with a solution. It may take you a year or two to resolve it, but that's what needs to be done. There's no other way to do this. You can't do the blame game and come up with a solution.
And you know, one of the issues that just frost my socks about this whole thing is that it's not a gun thing. Gun is a component. Guns are a component of this, like Bob just talked about. But to me, as a behaviorist, these issues are behavioral. And when they take a look at these guys, and by the way, the city of Chicago, with all these homicides they're having, they only have a 9.5% solvability rate. And I'll piggyback to Bob in a couple of minutes and have Bob provide some insight as to why they have such an atrocious solvability rate. But behaviorally, when they take a look at these guys, for the 9.5% of the people that they do arrest, they need to take a look at those profiles and pay attention to that, because every single one of these people are violent felony recidivists. They are repeat offenders, repeat gun offenders, repeat violent offenders, and the criminal justice system over there Cook County, Chicago, I should know, I've testified there before, but they just keep turning these guys out. They put these guys on probation. They put them in for a year. They put them in prison for a year. They're right back out. They don't do anything to address these problems. And like Bob said, what's going on in East Palo Alto is going on in Chicago, is going on in St. Louis, is going on in Detroit, and it's all about behavior, drugs, and gangs. This is about territory. 94% of all the shootings that happen in Chicago year after year after year are happening in South Side Chicago.
Well, and there's a lot of components here, and I totally agree with Bob that method is going to be the one that's going to ultimately fix it, but there's a lot of other fixes too. So we have a lot of single-parent families there. We have a lot of young, unwed mothers there. We have a lot of kids on the street there. We have a lot of gang activity. And we have an environment in Chicago where we do not support the police to go out and do the kind of policing that is needed to be done and to take these people off the streets when they commit the small crimes before they get to the big crimes, so that when we don't have the recidivism that we have. And then we have to have judges that actually enforce the laws and keep our rule of law and put these guys in jail so that things can calm down.
So how about that solvability issue, Bob?
You know, in East Palo Alto, we spent 2 years working this case, and the people of East Palo Alto are great people. They didn't want these people there any more than anybody else did. And after 2 years, and I'll give an example. There were so many drive-by shootings that mothers were putting their babies to sleep in bathtubs so they wouldn't get hurt from the bullets flying through the houses. I mean, this is how bad it got. And when we finally solved the problem, these people came out of their houses and thanked us. And that's what it takes. But you got to have a plan. You got to leave politics out of it. You got to get help when you need it, and then solve the problem.
The people want the problem solved. I totally agree with you. And that's in every community, that the people want the problem solved. It's the politicians who are the roadblock.
Well, yeah, and they create the obstructions for the police to be able to do their job. So instead of celebrating the police and saying good things about the police, Mayor Lightfoot has just been famous for doing the opposite, not showing any leadership whatsoever, blaming the police for the problem that they have in Chicago, blaming other people outside the city, Republicans, whatever, and not addressing the behavioral issues. But at the same time, the cops are taking such hits in the city of Chicago. Their motivation, the resonance for doing their job is really waning.
And you asked a little bit before about how come they can't solve these, 9%?
Right, 9.5%,
okay.
Which
is atrocious.
If a gang
kills another gang member, they're not going to go to the police and say what happened. They're going to take care of the problem themselves. You're not going to get cooperation from these people. They're going to kill each other. That's how they do business. They're not going to do it through the police. That whole cycle has to change.
Right. And it starts at the top with good leadership. But as long as you have these idiots and these, you know, blame people like Mayor Lightfoot, who's clearly not qualified for this job, and you have an electorate that is dumbed down and can't figure out how to pick a good leader as mayor and a city council, you're going to continue to have these problems. And I have to say, you can throw a lot of money at this, but unless you take care of these foundational issues of
yes.
having good leadership and talking about the issues that you talked about, Linda, these cause and effect factors, you're not going anywhere. Let me just say one thing, and I want Bob to chime in here, because I did the statistic currently, and we're far from being over this year. The city of Chicago has already lost $103,363,000 that the city taxpayers have to put out for paying for all the medical bills and the overtime and all this other stuff for these gun violence problems.
And that's just ridiculous to spend money that way when you can actually come up with a cohesive way to do it. And instead of, like, for example, the money they're spending on homelessness, all the federal money is being put in these cities and nothing's happening. It's getting worse. It's telling me that they're not being smart with the money. So all Chicago's got to do is get smart, come up with a strategy, get the resources they need, and go fix the problem.
Well, if they have $103 million, that's a really good start to those resources.
Yes.
They just need to divert it to using it the right way and get their head out of the sand and understand why these problems are happening. And it's the same things that I talked about and that you talked about with we just are like little hamsters on a wheel with this. We go nowhere, and we keep letting them in and out in this revolving door of going to jail and getting out and going to jail and getting out. And when are you going to realize that that person is a danger to other people and stop this process? As long as what you say, Ron, is right, as long as we sit there and just blame everybody else
right.
and don't take accountability
right.
and don't take responsibility for making it stop, it will continue. And the people of Chicago need to think about that again. It's not a Republican or Democratic issue. It is an issue of your survivability where you live, and you need to vote that way and not vote the ticket.
Yeah, you can't use the emotional, nonsensical rhetoric, this political rhetoric that takes us nowhere. We need to have, like Bob has outlined, and you've mentioned very articulately, Linda, we've got to have some viable solutions and some common sense ways of dealing with this gun violence problem, not only in Chicago, but nationally.
Well, I have a frost my socks, and I want to ask both of you gentlemen your opinion on this. I am really incensed about this. What is her name? The lady from Will and Deborah Messing, right? From Will and Grace.
Oh, Will and Grace.
Yeah. Now, I've never watched that show.
I never have either.
But I see almost on a daily basis, I see her name out there and she's saying something stupid. So now her thing is that she wants the names of all the people that are supporting President Trump when he comes to Hollywood or Los Angeles to do a fundraiser. Of all the Hollywood people that are there, she wants to out them, okay, so that they won't get work and that people can criticize them. Am I mistaken in that the Democratic Party was the party of, what, inclusivity?
No, well, see, this is just the intolerant progressive left. It's really fascism in Hollywood. And how dare you try to deny a person's ability to earn an income? All right, so, you know, they bagged on Joseph Kennedy back in the 50s, the guy that was calling everybody communists, and he put a lot of people, especially actors, out of work. And then you turn around and you use the same techniques that McCarthy used, that was called McCarthyism at the time, and try to out these people to damage their reputations and damage income.
Well, I mean, she certainly has her entitled to an opinion. You know, she receives no federal funds. Now, let's look at something else where the universities now are trying to narrate what you should learn in college. And
yes.
Okay. And Trump has already said, you know what, we're just going to cut off your funding. You start doing that kind of a narrative, and we'll change how you get your funding. Does she have enough influence to change people's opinions? I doubt it.
Well, I doubt it, too. But I think that, you know, you don't have the right to dox other people and put out their information like that. What has happened to being allowed a difference of opinion? If I like Trump and you don't, or you like somebody and I don't, why can't we still be friends about this? And why do we have to go to these levels of trying to harm people and trying to put out something that if you like the President of the United States, you're a bad person and you deserve some sort of punishment in your career? Well, That's just crazy.
And what they do is they'll say, this person supported Trump, gave money to Trump. They don't tell you the other part. They also gave money to the other side just to cover their bets, right?
Yeah, and I think
even probably know that part because they only have one opinion, and it's like a horse with blinders on. That's all that they see. And I just find it
It's public.
Just
it's public
troubling.
Information.
It's troubling.
But it's public information, but they won't tell you about the other part.
Yep.
Well, you know what? I am looking so forward to tomorrow because tomorrow's our tour day of Tuscany, and we're going to go up to San Giovanni, and we're going to do some wine tasting, and we're going to a medieval city, a fortress city. We're going to have some great wine, some great food. We're going to go to Pisa, go see the Leaning Tower, the Basilica. We're going to Siena. Man, we've got a great day planned for tomorrow.
Perfect weather.
And perfect weather.
Oh, we do. Oh, cool. So what I'm looking forward to is right this minute, running downstairs to a great restaurant and having a great pasta meal with some wine.
And there is not a bad meal to be had in the beautiful city of Florence, Italy. You guys ready to go?
Ready.
Here we go.